Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, getting ready for Battlefield 4. Dell's Venue tablets are crushing it. Intel's Haswell Nook, new PSU from Germany, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 237, recorded October 3rd, 2013. Tablets, Nooks, and Battlefield 4.
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by iFixit. You can fix it, and iFixit makes it easy with step-by-step repair guides, high-quality replacement parts, and all the tools you'll need. For $10 off your purchase of $50 or more, go to ifixit.com/twit and enter the code TWITCH at checkout. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay for what you use, doesn't require a contract, and offers unlimited devices on one pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, and most helpful news and answers in the world of hardware for the computers. Apple, Windows, Android, iOS, we love it all. Some of it we love more than others. Ryan Shrout joining us from his father's basement, I believe, loves gaming hardware most of all. Don't you, Ryan?
I was going to comment on your description of hardware for the computer. I mean, that's correct.
All right, well, let's restart the show. Cut it back. We'll go back. Okay, well, there's been a lot of home maintenance this week, so I may have lag bolts and like all thread and epoxy and industrial adhesives on the brain at this point.
Understood.
Be happy you don't have to bolt your house to the foundation. That's all I'm going to say, man.
Fair enough.
We should talk about it. So you are at your dad's house. You guys are going to go watch a little golf tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You have recently returned from your sojourns hanging with AMD in Hawaii. Is there anything we missed, Robert and I, last week talking about Mantle, the new hardware level API, the return to DOS gaming, if you will, that AMD is pushing?
It's, I think you guys covered most of it. You know, the only kind of thing I would point out about something like AMD Mantle is the success of this API, the success of this project is really dependent on a whole lot of factors that AMD doesn't have control over. And so whether or not it will be the runaway hit that they are hoping that it will be is kind of up in the air, right? So I don't know if you talked about last week, if you mentioned Glide. You remember Glide as the 3DFX API, right? And
no.
So this is in the same vein as that, right? So how we program specifically for a piece of hardware, but the industry has really gotten away from that in order to standardize on stuff like OpenGL and DirectX. It makes programming easier. It allows you to spend less time writing code for specific hardware, and it allows you, it is exactly what it's supposed to be. It's a software layer between the programmer and the hardware vendor where they both program to that software API, and then each side does their optimizations individually. Now, it's not as efficient, and that is why AMD is hoping that Mantle gives them some advantage. And I think it's kind of interesting that they already have such a huge win in their back pocket with the Frostbite 3 engine from mm-hmm. DICE, which is what's powering Battlefield 4, and it's going to power a lot of EA games going forward. And they've already said that the Battlefield 4 patch is going to be out in December of this year. So Battlefield 4 comes out at the end of October. Two months later, you'll have a Mantle compatible patch for it. And it'll be really interesting to see at that point, because you'll have new AMD hardware and you'll be able to say, what does the performance look like on the DX11 path? What does performance look like on the Mantle path? And you'll be able to compare those experiences side by side. So you'll be able to see what potential there is there. And then you'll get to see if other developers step up to the plate, want to write code specifically for AMD hardware, knowing that it's going to cut out, at this point in time, 62 to 64% of the market with NVIDIA graphics cards.
Right. It's exciting stuff.
Yep.
If they can make it work, which is always uh, Always interesting. I actually got hands-on with these a couple weeks ago. Dell has revived the Venue brand, and they've released four tablets, a 7 and 8-inch Venue running Android, and then the Dell Venue 8 Pro, the Dell Venue 8 11, which are 8.1 and 11-inch tablets running Windows 8.1 with Bay Trail processors. And I got to say, the build quality was outstanding. The feel was good. The you can see the sort of detachable keyboard action there. I got to say, it's interesting to watch. Dell has there's a really good quote. I want to say The Verge had, and yes, it was in The Verge. Dell isn't planning to abandon the consumer market after it goes private. Quote, I think the introduction of all these devices is really a signal of how important end-user computing is to Dell. I think you're going to start seeing Dell start being printed in the consumer space. Dell, of course, recently being taken private. They've gotten approval for that. So kind of a new evolution in Dell with Michael Dell taking over again. No signs of Windows RT in the lineup. Two Android tablets. Two Windows 8.1 tablets. And I got to say, the fit and finish, the build quality looked really good. Bay Trail felt really good in the hand. It wasn't like I could benchmark or do a lot of sophisticated, wasn't a lot of sophisticated applications to run, but I got to say, they felt really, really good. $150 for the Venue 7. And the really interesting thing about the Venue 8 Pro, it's $300. For an 8-inch Windows 8.1 tablet. And that's really tempting. 32 gigs of storage, 64 gigabyte version to come in the future. It felt and was as snappy as any Android tablet I've had my hands on. And, you saw the in a photo a couple minutes ago or a minute ago, the texture on the back. It's got a lot of potential. I think the pricing is really good. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this works with Dell, especially with the Dell Venue 11 Pro, which works as a tablet. And then you can basically use an external keyboard, like a keyboard dock that snaps into it to add an additional battery power. Which is really cool. I kind of like that, the way it kind of snaps off, flips around. And then you can actually have a dock that pushes it to an external monitor. So that actually has a lot of potential as a Windows laptop replacement. Which brings us to the refreshes on the XPS 13 and 15. The 15 has a sick 3200 by 1800 display. Absolutely gorgeous. I mean, I would have needed a loop to see the pixels on this thing. They were talking about a while back, the Dell XPS 11. In this case, the XPS 13, they have a 1080p touchscreen covered in Gorilla Glass, Haswell processor. Of course, that means battery life's bumping up to around 10 hours, HD 4400 for the graphics. And the XPS 15 has that amazing screen, 3200 by 1800, up to a terabyte of hard drive space. They plan to be putting NVIDIA discrete graphics available in that. $1,500 for the XPS with the 3200 by 1800 display. And then the XPS 13 starts around $1,000. Keyboard feels really good on these. I was kind of pleasantly surprised with how good the keyboard felt on that. Light in the hand. Everything you want from an ultrabook.
I love the idea that these vendors, because Asus announced their Haswell ultrabook that has a super high resolution screen. It's XPS 15 with a 3200 by 1800. It sounds pretty awesome. You actually got hands-on with that monitor, that edition of it?
I did. It was nice. I want that monitor 27 inches on my desktop. Yes. That resolution at 15 inches is all I want. I said to Robert on Techzilla a couple days ago, I was like, all I want to do is run Photoshop on that over and over and over. I mean, it's just gorgeous and a tremendous amount of real estate to work with in terms of the pixels on the page.
Do you feel like the 15-inch form factor is like too big for laptops these days, even though that is a 16:9 format?
It's funny. I've been carrying, before we called them ultra portables, what did we call them? I can't even remember the...
I don't know, ultra thins.
Ultra thins, ultra portables, super tiny. Somebody's in the chat room is probably like banging. Let me go check the chat room window, see if somebody's virtually banging their head trying to remember, You know, like the first light laptop I carried, I think had a 9-inch screen, right? So I went from like 9 inches to 12 inches, and I've pretty much been around a 12 or 13 inch screen for much of my adult life. I've had 15 inch laptops. They don't bother me as much, but because I kind of live with my notebook in the office, I tend to go with like a 13 inch screen, and then I'll sit down and plug it into a larger monitor if I want to. I think the 15 inch, you know, me personally, I think the four people left that are going to carry 17-inch laptops, which are like professional photographers that are working on crazy shoots where they want to be able to preview photos in real time, and I don't know, engineers or something like that. You know what I mean? There's some apps where having that 17-inch screen is incredibly useful, including actually Photoshop or video editing. But I think the 17-inch laptop has kind of peaked, and everybody's fed up with trying to pack a school lunch tray in any kind of reasonable size backpack or bag.
Yeah, even my wife, who has a, I think it's a 15-inch, maybe it's a 16-inch, I hope it's not a 17-inch, but it's got like the number pad off to the side of the keyboard. That's how big of a laptop it is. Now, she has finally gotten around to, as she's gone back to school, hey, can I get something that's a little bit smaller, fits in the backpack a little bit easier, a little bit lighter to carry around? So,
you know. It was funny. I mean, I remember my uncle. Yeah, no, I remember my uncle being like, oh, the big one's only a pound heavier. I'm like, you know, 7.5 pounds doesn't sound like anything. This is a couple of years ago, you know, 6.9 pounds. It doesn't sound bad, but when you're lugging that SOB, you know, from place to place, or it's in your sample case and you're trucking it around, it's going to feel really heavy really soon. So, yeah. That said, that 15-inch felt light in the hand. The construction is slim. I want to say it may even be in like 9 or 11 millimeter package. Can't be quite that thin, but it sure felt that way. It looked good. I mean, you know, they were shiny. They were nice. I want one. You know what else I want? Intel's Nook. Perhaps the longest name I'm going to say all week, the D54250WYK SFF system review. It's basically a Haswell update for the Nook. Do I want this? Is this my next server box if I'm willing to put all my sort of hard drives over USB 3.0?
That's the key, right? So the Nook is essentially unchanged as it was a year ago, and the form factor is a little bit thinner. It's a little bit lower on the Z height, but it is the same 4-inch by 4-inch motherboard inside of there. It's upgraded processor, upgraded graphics. So if you wanted to do some kind of fairly modest gaming on your TV with it, you have that option now. But it changes mostly is connectivity, right? So you're talking USB 3 instead of USB 2, which is a great upgrade. You still have HDMI output and you have mini DisplayPort output, but you are losing Thunderbolt. So while last year's model had, they had two models, one with Thunderbolt and one with dual HDMI, this one is a single HDMI, no Thunderbolt, gigabit Ethernet built in, 4 USB 3.0 ports. And I'm okay with that because even though I personally, at least at the office, we use our Thunderbolt port with our Nook as a kind of a NAS connection and server, for the most part, if you're buying a Nook, you're not hooking it up to $1,000, $1,500 storage arrays through Thunderbolt. Most people are going to be using USB 3.0 if they're using external devices. So I think this makes sense. Internally, it's the same deal. You're using SODIMM memory. This one actually requires DDR3L, so the low voltage memory for that processor. You have room for an mSATA SSD and room for a mini PCIe-based Wi-Fi card, right? So Intel provided this system as we ran it had 8 gigs of memory. It had 802.11 AC Wi-Fi, and it had a new Intel 530 series SSD that ran at like 520 megabytes per second read and write speed. So it was a high performance machine in a very tiny little box, which was kind of impressive. For people who are maybe familiar, it's almost the same hardware in terms of the processor GPU architecture that exists in the Haswell MacBook Air. So the performance of those was identical.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny. You can still get the Nook with HDMI Thunderbolt and the Core i3 3217. No, that's the 3217 UDC 3217BY, another product name that rolls off the tongue. But that's a Core i3 with Thunderbolt for $250. You know, and I'm almost willing to take the sort of power consumption penalty, which is pretty minimal when you get right down to it compared to running like a 500 watt Core i5, but yeah, man, it's still
too expensive in my book. So it's a bare bones system. It's $360, and that's you've got to add memory, you've got to add storage, and technically that's it. If you add wireless, that's another little bit, right? So you can get an mSATA SSD in the 120 gig range for about $120 to $140, and then you're talking, if you only want 4 gigs of memory instead of 8, you're talking maybe $45 or $50. So you're still looking at a $450 to $550 total purchase cost to get up and running, which is a little steep. You know, it's not steep if you consider what the hardware sells in other laptops today. But I think what most people unfortunately look at is they see that small size, that 4-inch by 4-inch configuration, and they think that's not worth $600. That's not worth $500, even though the hardware on that is up there in cost for sure.
Right. It's basically all of the expensive parts of a notebook minus the screen, which is the most expensive part, and the enclosure, which is all of the engineering. Man, oh man. And suddenly I'm looking at mSATA SSDs, and I'm just going to walk away, and I'm going to find my power meter, and I'm going to see what my Core i5 is drawing in terms of power consumption when it's serving video. And then I will start talking about doing strange and wondrous things like... looking at the Intel Nook. Intel on Arduino. I thought this was really interesting. Jeremy wrote this up on PC Per. A telling quote to describe the Arduino community can be found in Make Blong's talk with Intel CEO Brian Krasanich?
Yeah,
it's been so long since I've stumbled over a name like that. Who relates a conversation with a developer who preferred to use Arduino for prototyping even when offered Intel boards for free. So... today, Intel has officially joined the Arduino team with the release of the Galileo, which features a new 400 megahertz Intel Quark system on a chip with 256 megabytes of DRAM and a mini PCI Express slot, 100 megabit Ethernet port, micro SD, RS-232, USB host, client ports. So basically puts it right up next to the Raspberry Pi, writes Jeremy. This is pretty interesting. And I want to say there's a link to a Hackaday article that talks about the Intel-powered Arduino. It's interesting, right? Because Arduino, Raspberry Pi, BeagleBoard, there's all these sort of small, self-contained dev boards. And this is kind of interesting. Essentially, it's an x86 Arduino board. And I'm kind of curious to see what people do with that. But if you want to see some interesting comments on that, head over to the Hackaday comments on that. 230 hertz, this is really poor on my ARM-based IMX233 Olenizino running at 454 megahertz. I can toggle the GPIO pin with a frequency of 5.1 to 6.1 megahertz when using memory mapped across. It's fun. You know, so Arduino have sold out to Intel then. It's every time I think I've seen like all of the dark corners of outraged user bases on that, I find that there's more and more.
it really keeps going. So this, I mean, it's interesting to see. This is the first Quark board that they're putting out there, trying to get people interested in building for this device. I having just recently seen Ken, our engineer, build a very useful device for us internally based off on Arduino, the idea of being able to immediately just like move that straight over to this, but then you also get to run Linux on the backside of it, which allows you to do a lot of other cool stuff. It's pretty interesting, even as a DIY hacker, as opposed to somebody who's looking to develop software for a new, you know, wrist watch PC thing. So pretty neat stuff.
We had a lot of fun putting together a sort of Raspberry Pi with BitTorrent sync. It's just amazing what you can do with these boards. You start playing around with them, and of course a lot of them make really good media boards. Don't think it's quite what you want to be doing with this Intel board, but it's interesting stuff. Do the Germans actually to thank a new sponsor, a company I am profoundly familiar with, a company that has helped me repair several notebooks, an unending parade of iPhones and iOS devices, and its company does a lot more. It's called iFixit. I've known about the company for years. It's an amazing resource, right? Because they started out kind of like teaching people how to repair Macs and then iPods and iPhones. And it's a resource with instructions. They do teardowns. And then they started expanding. Of course, they sell parts. It's really incredibly, you've probably seen their devices, like the day something comes out, whether it's a Microsoft Surface or an iPhone 5S, they take it apart and they give you an idea of just how easy it would be to repair. It's also an incredible online community. 10,000 repair guides for everything from your smartphone, your computer, your tablet, to games consoles, home appliances, even your bike. I'm pretty sure there's some automotive instructions there too. iFixit's goal is to kind of give you a free online repair manual for everything. If you shattered your laptop screen, you need to repair your game console, swap the battery on your tablet or smartphone, replace the screen on your iPhone for the third time this year. iFixit has me covered and they have you covered. And they can even hook you up with the parts you'll need to do it. And everything they sell is tested and guaranteed. It's a good crew. I know Kyle, the founder, personally. They make really good repair tools for consumer electronics, including, I believe you're going to see this on your screen right now, the ProTech Toolkit. Bring it, Burke. We actually have one of the original versions of these, which is in a sort of, we've transplanted it to a large Craftsman toolbox. It's like 70 tools to assist you with any mod, malfunction, or misfortune that comes your way. This is good stuff if you have tablets or small electronics. The driver set you're looking at right there is iFixit's 54-bit driver kit. Phillips bits, the dreaded Pentalobe bits that are now replacing the screws on your, well, pretty much everything Apple does. Torx security bits, tri-wing bits, triangle bits, which are basically used on McDonald's toys and I think nothing else. It's a nice swivel top screwdriver, a flex extension to help you get to those just bizarrely positioned screws that are designed for people with 9-inch long fingers. ESD safe, electrostatic discharge safe, precision tweezers. There's a collection of that. Whole stack of blue things on the left are called spudgers. Spudgers are what you use to manipulate things inside, whether it's pins or the corners of a case, or to pop something loose when you're replacing a touchscreen. It's really, really good stuff. And they even have, you can see that right in the lower left-hand corner, yes, ladies and gentlemen, anti-static wrist strap, which I continue to refuse to use just out of stubbornness, but you should take a look at. The tool roll they have now is really, really nice. Basically, it'll allow you to keep all the tools close at hand and know instantly if something has been put back, which is really, really smart. And it's $64.95 and backed by a one-year warranty. Hobbyists and home DIY fixers can use the ProTech Toolkit for doorknobs, eyeglasses, cabinet doors, sink fixtures, and more. If you're looking to an artist or hobbyist tool chest, look no further. Best of all, there are thousands of free iFixit guides to help you put your tools to use. Repair is noble. E-waste is a huge problem. Why pay somebody else an arm and a leg to fix it when you can do it yourself? Be a part of the solution and repair your own electronics, people. Join the repair revolution. This is stuff I've bought with my own pocket. With iFixit, you can fix it yourself. Visit iFixit.com/twit for free step-by-step guides. iFixit also sells every part and tool you'll need. Plus, if you enter the code TWICH, T-W-I-C-H, at checkout, $10 off any purchase of $50 or more. That's iFixit.com/twit. We want to thank iFixit for their support of this week in computer hardware. Good stuff, people. Check Indeed. Out Twitch. No. Check out iFixit.
With the offer code TWITCH. There you
Thank
go.
You very much. I'm glad one of us is on top of this thinking thing today. No, really, this is it's incredible. They basically spent like the better part of a year when the iPad 2 came out. It has the most miserable glued down screen in the history of screens. And they experimented in these heat hair dryers. And they finally came up with this, and this is my second one, so it's still in the plastic, which is essentially allows you to heat the screen. You put this in the microwave, you heat it up, you lay it down, and you transfer. You can basically helps you to soften the glue, and that's really works for a lot of the Samsung Android phones. If you have a glued down screen you need to repair, it might look obscene if you're watching this at home, but it's an incredibly useful tool for repairing your broken screens.
So I've been meaning to buy a couple of those, and I have not done that yet. So
it's time, man. iFixit.com, and do us a favor. Use the offer code iFixit.com/twit, and use the offer code TWITCH when you do, Ryan. It's good.
I will do that. I'm on it.
I know you don't really repair things a lot. You just stack them up in your office and move on to the next computer.
I'm a little guilty of that.
Yeah, but eventually you fix it all. That's the fun part. Mm-hmm. My goodness. Do the Germans build superior power supply units? Make the be quiet exclamation point pure power L8. Later, the power supply review up at PCPro.com. Lee Garbutt, a.k.a. Robotech. This is interesting. This is a German power supply company. I've never heard of them before. They're just making the move in the United States. Apparently, quote, the market leader for PC power supplies in Germany for 7 years straight. And so the L8 is their value series. What does Lee have to say about this actually kind of elegantly designed power supply? Or, you know, as elegantly as you can design a power supply at this point.
As elegantly as you can design a square with a fan in it.
Just saying. You can make it fanless, but then you have a fanless cooling issue. But I'm going to stop.
So he actually liked the power supply quite a bit. 700 watts. It got the silver award. It does have two independent 12 volt rails. So this is not a unified rail. 80 plus bronze certification, which is good for, you know, efficiency and that kind of stuff. Support for 2 8-pin graphics cards out of the box. So dual 2 8-pin graphics cards, I guess. Other than the name, I think it's a pretty good unit, especially considering the price. This is like $99, I believe, which for good quality power supplies is actually well in the range of being a good deal as well. So $99. I'm trying to think. I don't think it's actually – it looks like it said they'd be in the U.S. by the end of September, which it is now. Apparently it's October, right? It's a good deal. It's there's nothing that really kind of stands out of it being a world beater power supply, right. But it's a very good unit. And it is the entry of this German-based manufacturer coming over to the U.S. and trying to build up their own brand here. So if you're looking for a unit in that range, the 700-watt range, which I think is that's a pretty good middle ground to be in, yeah. I think, between a 500 and that 1200 that you really want but don't need for any purpose at all.
I got to say, I'm seeing these power supplies. I'm seeing Be Quiet power supplies for selling. This power supply has been selling for like $180 on eBay. So if it's showing up for $100 in the U.S., that is a really good deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that price. Good stuff. Latest ultimate motherboard ever. We used to talk about like the graphics card like every other week. And now it seems to be, are motherboards the new GPUs in terms of being like, just the area where vendors are starting to concentrate some efforts, or this is like kind of like cherry tree syndrome, where this is the last great wave of motherboards before Intel starts soldering processors down and ruins the fun for all of us?
I hope that's not the case. I think what happens is there was a lot of kind of pent up engineering at these motherboard companies because the Sandy Bridge to Ivy Bridge launch, that transition used the same socket. It was not a whole lot of change. People had a lot of expectation built around Haswell. And even though on the CPU side, it's not, you know, an earth-shattering change in terms of what it offered in performance-wise on the CPU, everybody expects that this will be a convergence point for PC upgraders, right? So even if you're not upgrading to Haswell today, in a few months when you are like, I'm going to buy a new graphics card, I might as well go ahead and get that new motherboard and processor too, that this is going to be where they all head to. So a lot of engineering time and dollars were spent on these Z87 platforms. And everybody has their flagship. This happens to be MSI's new flagship, the Z87 X-Power. It's I think it's got like a retail price of $439. So, which is a lot of dollars for a motherboard.
But it's like the ultimate motherboard.
It's pretty good. It's got some impressive stuff. So like on the back IO, you got 8 USB 3.0 ports. It's got a killer NIC powered Ethernet port, gigabit Ethernet port. It's got dual HDMI plus display port. It has 802.11 BGN and Bluetooth 4.0 built into it. And it's got a PS2 port. I don't know if that really counts as a huge feature, but it's got one on there. And then if you look at the layout of the board design itself, they did some pretty interesting things. First of all, I love the color design on it. I like the matte black finish to almost everything with just a little bit of yellow accent. But there's actually 5 PCI Express by 16 slots. But what's interesting is if you look at the first 3, I think we saw this on a Gigabyte board before, but the second slot from the top actually will run at full by 16 if it's the only graphics card installed in the system. If you want to start using SLI 2-way, 3-way, 4-way, then you use the first slot, skip the second one, go to the third, fourth, fifth, and you'll notice that those are now evenly spaced with 2 slots between each of them, and each of them will get by 8 bandwidth thanks to a PCI Express 3 bridge chip on the motherboard. So they did the deal. If you have one graphics card and you're really protective and you want to make sure that that card gets all sit by 16 lanes of bandwidth, you can do that. If you're going to do SLI, they make sure everybody gets at least by 8, which is a nice kind of no compromise solution to getting at maximum performance whatever configuration you have to be using. I do wish, you know, with all the other options that they had like an 802.11ac option on here. But it's 802.11 and still obviously good enough for most people. And chances are most people that are buying this motherboard are going to be using Ethernet. I would encourage them to do so at least.
Because there's so much goodness going on there.
I just, 10 SATA ports, all SATA 6 gigabit per second ports. Additional USB 3 front headers, even 2 more front headers. So you can have a total of, let's see, there's 8 on the back, I think I said, plus 4 in the front. So you have 12 USB 3.0 ports on the board, you know, onboard overclocking buttons, power reset buttons, and then adjusting voltages and clock speeds as well through that. And it really does have like everything you could want on it. The BIOS is very complex. It's got all kinds of features and options in there. It has what some people on our staff consider an obnoxious amount of yellow to what I consider to be an appropriate amount of yellow. inside the design of the software, but it's all pretty good. So, you know, you've got to, I tell people this all the time, don't buy a $430 motherboard just because. Like, make sure you need what is on a $439 motherboard. There's not going to be a whole lot of people out there that need that, but chances are, if you do, you already know that you do. It's one of those things, like, if you have to ask, you probably can't afford it. It's not really that case here, but if you have to ask why you would need all these features, maybe you don't need it. But if you have a list of features in your head that you want to make sure are there for your next board, then, you know, there are options from MSI, Gigabyte, and Asus out there in the market. Right. And the MSI Z87X Power is pretty good. So, well, it looks like it's $398 on Amazon, $390 shipped, but $390. So it's a high price. It's a high priced device. But impressive features. Yeah.
How about that Battlefield 4? Have you pre-ordered? Are you going to pre-order it with an R9-290X? How are you going to get your Battlefield 4 on, Mr. Trout? What's going to happen here, man?
So the closed beta that lasted just a few days, I think we talked about it on the show. Remember a long, long time ago, a game called Medal of Honor came out, like the reboot of Medal of Honor. And it was if you bought the Medal of Honor Deluxe Edition, you were going to get in the Battlefield 4 beta. I remember talking at the time thinking, why are we already talking about Battlefield 4? Like Battlefield 3 hadn't been out that long. What, this is so crazy. Right. And here we are in October, and I had completely forgotten about that. And I was expecting not to get into the closed Battlefield 4 beta and have to wait for the open one. And so I said, well, you bought Medal of Honor, so just log into Origin and it'll be there. Sure enough, downloaded it. I only got to play it for about 45 minutes. There's only one map. This is kind of how the beta went for Battlefield 3. But it's impressive. It's impressive. And it's interesting to see. So when AMD had that live stream that you guys talked about last week, the thing they kind of promoted was, hey, you'll be able to pre-order a Radeon R9 290X, which is going to be their new flagship, with Battlefield 4 on October 3rd. What's interesting, I don't have a link for it. I apologize for that to show anybody, but it's interesting that I've never heard of pre-order this product without knowing the specs and without knowing the actual price. So you put down $100 and we will eventually tell you what you're going to buy and how much it's going to cost.
That's a lot of love for your fan base.
You must really have some respect. Respect's not the word I'm looking for. You must really trust AMD. You must really trust EA to deliver on those promises if you're willing to prop down $100 for one of 8,000 limited edition cards with these Battlefield 4 pack-ins, just sight unseen. Like, you know that it's supposed to be fast, but you don't know what it's supposed to be faster than, and you don't know by how much, and you also don't know if it's going to be $500 or $1,000. I assume if you put down money and it comes out at $1,000 and you say no thanks, you can get your $100 back, but it's still kind of an odd situation.
You know, I'm trying to decide whether to make a joke about you being a jaded reviewer or just being like, wow, that's, I guess they figure there's going to be a lot of Battlefield 4 enthusiasts who are in, you know, ready for a GPU upgrade. And boy, I hope it's well, because you don't want to piss off your core audience. Like, what if Battlefield 4 sucks and the GPU doesn't deliver? That would be a nightmare. I would expect that it will deliver performance wise. And yeah, I hope that Battlefield 4 will be a giant bag of awesome. I mean, an hour or two?
Yeah, I got maybe an hour of play into it. I died a lot, which is usually the case with online shooters immediately. I think the open beta is started now as people listen to this, that you can just go to, if you download Origin, and I think you can just download the Battlefield 4 beta for free at this point and give it a shot. It's impressive to look at, if nothing else. And keep in mind that both AMD and NVIDIA release drivers on Tuesday, I believe, specifically focus on Battlefield 4 performance. So if you're going to play it, make sure you download the latest drivers, whatever versions those happen to be. Go to GeForce.com or game.amd.com for your respective software there.
How did Battlefield 4 has just totally snuck up on me.
It seems like a quick release. It seemed like Battlefield 3 was just out, but it's been 2 years, almost exactly 2 years since Battlefield 3 came. Yeah.
Of course, I had a kid. There was that whole 6 or 8 months of just blind.
It makes things just disappear.
Boom! And the years just rolled by. No one's going to roll by pain-free and full of joy. Our sponsor, Ting. You look at their bills, you're not going to suffer. Twitch.ting.com. If you enter the code Twitch, you save $10 off a $50 purchase. And you may be looking at me and saying, Patrick, why? Why should I move to Ting? And I'm going to tell you, I'm a Ting subscriber. I got a wireless modem with Ting. I've been playing around with an Android smartphone with Ting. Ting's a no BS mobile service. They're an MNVO, a reseller of the Nationwide Sprint Network, and they are trying to make phone ownership as pain-free as possible. I get with two devices and a fair amount of usage on one of them, I am getting like a whopping $34 a month for my phone bill. It adjusts. That's kind of crazy. You're billed at the end of the month for what you've used. That's part of what Ting does. You can choose like the extra small package, right? And if you go over the extra small package, they're not going to be like, we're going to rock you for 25 cents for every character you type on your phone. We're not going to charge you $4,000 per gigabyte. They're going to move you up to the next package. They're going to charge you for that at the end of the month. And it's cool. You buy your device. It's kind of the secret sauce of Ting. You buy no contracts, no ETFs. You are utterly, truly, totally contract free. You totally own your device. You can move it if you want to. There's no early termination fees. Again, they're trying to be a no BS service. And it's kind of interesting. This is new. They have an ETF, a early termination fee relief program. If you're paying an ETF to come to Ting, they've got your back. Ting will give you credit for 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. Simply purchase your device through Ting, port your number, then submit your final bill with your ETF detailed from your previous carrier and go to ting.com/ETF for more information on that. But I want to say, I'm a subscriber. I'm trying to figure out how to. They don't have iPhones yet, but they have an amazing selection of Android devices, and you can bring your Sprint device, and they've got information for that at ting.com. Do us a favor. If you love the show, if you're thinking about a new phone, go check out twitch.ting.com. That's twitch.ting.com.
I like it. I like it. I like it. I like it. I really want to have my wife and my phone bill disappear and become Ting phone bill, which is much smaller. I'm talking like Burke now.
I love. I love the idea of the ETF relief program. That's pretty like, awesome. First of all, it's a great name. It's a great name for it, and getting $75 back,
yeah,
is awesome. You know. ETFs have always been like the most evil thing in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And anybody there are a that can help
evil things in the world.
Okay, maybe not the most. They're up there. They're above 50%. Let's say that they make the cut up there. Yeah,
the top 50% of evil. So, yeah, I'm going there. Do us a favor, support our sponsors on the episode today. Twitch.ting.com with the offer code Twitch. You'll save $10 off a purchase of $50 or more. And I fix it. I'm telling you, I fix it as good tools, people. I own a bunch of them. iFixit.com/Twit, and you enter the code Twitch at checkout. We should take a moment to do some email questions. If you want to email us, mm-hmm. Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. If you want to text. If you want to text Ryan, here's his phone number. Oh, your wife.
No, don't do that.
No, if you want to tweet Router at Patrick Norton, that's the easiest way to get a hold of us. We got time for a couple questions. It's been kind of a crazy show today. And I want you to be fresh and relaxed for your golf outing tomorrow, your golf watching outing tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a good thing. It's much more active than basketball. It's good for you to get some exercise before basketball season gets really hot and heavy.
Exactly.
We got an email from Zach. He's an IT professional developer who needs to run virtualization constantly. I think the Intel LGA 2011 with an Ivy Bridge i7-4820K is the way to go, since quad channel memory seems like it would be beneficial and the embedded it's going to benefit me. Is it worth the jump in price for all the components, CPU, motherboard, quad, RAM? Secondly, the LGA 2011 is almost ancient, 2 years old, and Xeon is too pricey. Any enthusiast-grade quad-channel alternatives on the horizon? And my thought would be no. And you're going to tell me I'm wrong.
No, I'm not. The Ivy Bridge E was just released. Haswell E is the expected next release in kind of the high-end enthusiast, low-end workstation markets. I wouldn't expect to see that for at least another year. So in terms of quad channel or higher memory bandwidth, higher memory capacity options, that's going to be your peak now for a little while. It's going to be Ivy Bridge E. The only thing I wanted to check was, since he mentioned virtualization specifically, I wanted to see if there were any technologies that the Ivy Bridge E did not support.
Because it's funny, like, I want to say, I think they were talking back in June about 8-core Haswell E CPUs with quad channel DDR4 memory. Slides or faux slides.
Yeah.
But it's,
I think going the Ivy Bridge E route for somebody who is running a lot of virtual machines makes sense. You know, Haswell has a higher instruction per clock performance still, without a doubt. But and so if he's leaning towards a 4820, it's a quad core version, which also is Haswell. So he's really bending his leaning towards the benefits of quad channel memory. And if he's running a lot of virtual machines, that may be one of the few areas where having that additional memory bus width would be a big advantage over not having it, I guess, using a standard dual channel controller like on Haswell.
There you have it. Let me pull this out of the way. Sorry, I was double checking something on our Twitch offer. Sure. We got an email from Eric about Battlefield 4 upgrades. First, thanks for all the hard work you do on Twitch and for the PC hardware community. And Ryan, it's good stuff you do. I'm an avid listener and find listening to your podcast turns work around the house a bit more tolerable. I love the idea of someone vacuuming while listening to Twitch, but I'm very domestic that way. I use my PC mostly for gaming and for some entertainment purposes, writes Eric. I love to play Battlefield 3, and I'm really anticipating Battlefield 4. I would really like to play Battlefield 4 at close to max settings at 1920 by 1080. I currently have an Intel 930 at 2.8 gigahertz stock with a Cooler Master Hyper 212 Plus, XFX 5870 graphics, an Asus P6X58D premium LGA 1366 motherboard, 20 gigabytes of DDR3 RAM, Corsair A6 Series 1000-watt power supply, a terabyte Seagate and 256 gigabyte Samsung 840 SSD and a Cooler Master half 932 case to keep it all. With a budget of $500, what should be my move to hopefully accomplish playing Battlefield 4 with good settings and refresh rates? The other option is that I could hang on and wait for a bit more for Black Friday action and try to score big then. Thanks, fellows, for your time and all your hard work. Eric. First of all, Eric, I think Black Friday, unless you're shopping online on like Amazon or Newegg and you get a deal that involves you not leaving your house and being beaten half to death by angry people shopping for whatever horrid little toy their children are going to ignore in exchange for playing with the box on Christmas morning. I haven't been impressed with a lot of the tech kind of bargains on and I don't expect to find a lot of GPU amazement on Black Friday. That's just me. That said, a lot of online vendors do great Black Friday specials. Just don't go out and get yourself stomped at the mall trying to buy a GPU because you're going to get it cheaper online. You know, 1920 by 1080, you know, it's funny. We were talking about this on Techzilla last week, and it's like, you look at like a 3770K, and it's like, oh my goodness, Photoshop is faster, video rendering is faster, file compression is faster, but gaming at 1080p, not so much. I would want to upgrade his GPU.
Yeah, that's definitely the first choice.
Yeah.
I agree. I don't really think the idea of waiting, in my opinion, buying components on Black Friday is not you get good deals, right? Maybe you can find a good deal on a laptop or something like that, but components, they're already at a fairly low margin as it is. It's definitely GPU. It's definitely GPU at this point. Now, not to hurt Patrick's feelings, but that Core i7-930 is getting a little long in the tooth.
A little.
So that may be your next project. But the 5870 is definitely going to be the bottleneck for Battlefield 4, I think, going forward. So for $500, you can get a hell of a graphics card. You can get, let's see, what's up there right now. Well, they've already announced the Radeon R9 280X will be $299. So that's $200 under your budget, and that's a pretty high-end card. And then after that, you got the GeForce GTX 770. And then the GeForce GTX 780 is above that 500 mark. It's like in the 600 to 650 level. So what I would do if I were him is I would wait for these AMD releases to come out, let you judge at that point where performance is going to sit, and then make that decision after there. And for 1080p, honestly, you'll probably be able to buy that R9 280X for $300 and have $200 left over that you can save and hold on to in hopes that maybe something comes up at Black Friday or save a little bit more money and get that new processor and motherboard.
Yeah, it's funny. As Tom's Hardware has they've given up sort of the traditional graphics chart, graphics chip charts and CPU charts, and they have these kind of hierarchies that kind of on the CPU side and then just sort of just top to bottom in terms of performance on the GPU side. And I was having one of those moments where I was like, wait a minute, I can't find that part on the chart anywhere. And I was like, is it really that old? I will also acknowledge that yes, the 930 is getting a little long in the tooth, but for 1080p gaming, it bothers me a lot less than say if you were doing a lot of file rendering or living in Photoshop or video rendering, then yeah, I'd go for the CPU first. But upgrading your PC, it's a continual battle. Just in denial that my Core i7-920, I'm going to want to replace it. About 100 Blu-rays into my 300 Blu-ray encoding process, I'm going to be staring at 3770Ks and contemplating Haswell parts. Oh my goodness. We talk about APU Crossfire or Braden's crazy monitor madness before we go.
Let's just do the APU Crossfire run real quick.
Danielle says, my current rig is also my most recent build, centered around an 810-6700. And before you say it, Patrick, yes. Am I getting that predictable? With an ASRock Extreme 4 motherboard, I was planning to eventually add an HD6670 and take advantage of Crossfire. However, after reading Ryan's frame rating article and hearing it discussed at length on the show and PC Per, I am afraid of Crossfire. Will I actually have a worse experience gaming on a Crossfire APU-GPU setup than on APU alone? Am I right to be worried? And is the long and short of it, I just need to save up more money and get a higher-end GPU and leave the video cores in my sweet little AMD engine that could dormant. Danielle, I like your style.
I would say you won't have a worse experience cross-firing an APU with a discrete GPU. But you would probably at this point get just the performance of the discrete GPU. You won't get any advantage of cross-firing it, which is fine if you're okay with the performance of a 6670 graphics card, which should be okay for some modest 1080p gaming at this point. I don't, you know, AMD is doing a lot of work to fix all the crossfire stuff now. They don't have hybrid crossfire or whatever they're calling it now, APU crossfire fixed yet. Right. But I believe they will have it fixed by the end of the year. Even if they fix it, I still believe that the value proposition of an APU plus a discrete GPU is fairly minimal for gaming. I would rather, say, spend $50 more and get a 7870 or something like that, something that's going to be a little bit higher performance discrete card and will blow away the performance of that integrated plus the cheap discrete. There was a story on Tom's Hardware, I believe, that looked at APU crossfire scaling, and it has the exact same problem as the Ifinity scaling that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, the testing that I did. It's essentially the same problem. The Ifinity plus crossfire is the same as crossfiring an APU and an integrated or an APU and a discrete card. So, yes, it will not work well today. It may in the future, but I don't think you should really hedge your bet on that, especially for such a low cost part. I would wait a little bit more, spend $50 more, get a good high quality discrete card from AMD or NVIDIA, and go down that route.
Sorry, Skype just did something really terrible involving a scratching noise in the background. So if it looks like my eyeballs were popping out of my head, it's because there's just this incredible amount of static coming over the speaker. Okay. Might be a good spot to put an edit point in. Perk.
Yeah.
Or not. Now he's mocking me. He's coming up on PC Per this week since I just completely lost my mind after a Skype glitch.
So I would say, let's see, what is coming up this week? How about graphics cards? How about we just leave it at graphics cards? So if you're interested in GPUs, you'll want to pay attention this particular upcoming week. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
There you have it. I'm playing around with FreeNAS boxes finally on Texil, which is kind of fun. And there will be some announcements involving wireless speakers next week, I'm going to say.
Two teases. I'm
a very popular company. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah, Texas Interest. There's been this sort of like wave of audio products people pitch in lately. So that's going to be fun because I like the speakers and I like the gear. And if you've been looking for HD Nation, we're no longer on Tech Feed. Just go to revision3.com/HD Nation is the best place to find us. A brief commercial sponsor message on behalf of Robert Heron and myself. Ladies and gentlemen, if this is your first episode of Twitch, we have lots of them, hundreds, in fact. You can find each and every one of them at twit.tv/Twitch, T-W-I-C-H, Twitch. And the email is twitch@twit.tv if you want to ask us a question. And as we mentioned earlier, at Ryan Trout, at Patrick Norton on the Twitter. And we want to thank Burke for suffering so gallantly in the control room while I was setting up today. I think someone pulled all of the audio cables out of the patch board and both got it all back and running again. I could be wrong, but at one point we heard his voice from far, far away in the Twit cottage. And I thought to myself, is he in the basement? Is he in the basement rewiring things?
I think he was.
That's it for this episode of Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. We're going to see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Schrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.